some other man do.
We're recording then?
Yeah, I think we're recording. Yeah.
Okay. Let's just like small talk for a minute and then we'll kind of get into the heavy stuff. I did a podcast with, first of all, we've been gone since October.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that
things
later.
Happened. Yeah.
And now it's January, end of January.
End of January. Tomorrow's the 31st. Yeah, 31 in January. I can never keep
holy
them all straight.
Holy shit. I just look at my phone and go, holy shit. Yeah, I was on a podcast recently that was really cool. The Queen of Sexy on Instagram, and she has a podcast called Yes, a Stripper, which is like a twist on that pole dancers for many years were hashtagging not a stripper to make sure that they were putting themselves in a class that was above the women who originated the style of dance they were doing.
So they're categorizing themselves more as dancers than...
Yeah, like, I need you to know, just because I dance on a pole doesn't mean I'm a stripper. Which, like, people in our community, this is redundant. They know this. This has been going on forever. So sorry if you keep hearing about this if you're kind of in the community listening to the podcast. But yeah, so I like she's got this podcast that, you know... that a lot of us started hashtagging yes a stripper many years ago. I don't use hashtags anymore because they shadow ban and delete sex workers so quickly. Anyone in an industry like mine, whether it's stripping or any other kind of sex work, they're so eager to like silence us, shut us down, whatever. So I won't even use hashtags. I barely post. I try to lay low, which is really... you know, the way I've chosen to deal with it, but it's really infuriating because this is the livelihood of many women I really, really care about. So, and that they're, you know, cock blocking their money, you know, to not allow them.
Cock blocking is not a great thing.
No, always bad in most situations. But yeah, so... so yeah, I had a really good time on that podcast, and it did kind of warm me up a little bit to come back and you know, finish what we've started here on this podcast, you know. But I was really nervous, and I feel really nervous today. Like, I'm not quite in the swing of things like before, but you know, we'll be okay.
Yeah,
we'll figure it out together.
We've got the rest of the day to figure it out, and we can edit and not edit and... we'll see what happens.
It's true. Or people can just see that, you know, not everything's perfect all the time. So
true. I'm not perfect most of the time.
What?
Yeah.
This is brand new information.
Well, thank you for thinking I'm perfect. You're probably one of the few women that think that.
I was just quoting Phoebe from Friends.
Oh, okay.
There's something she says once, and she said that. That is brand new information. And I say it all the time. I think it's hilarious. Anyway, should we segue into like other things?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not good at ever like really just making a natural segue. I'm just like,
I'm not either.
someday
we'll get it, but
yeah. So I thought that I would share, and I haven't decided how much to share. I really am just going to wing it. I've been in hermit mode. I've been very, quiet about a lot of what's going on. People like you or people kind of like close by or in the know, and I have so much to say, but one of the things is that like I really don't feel like the same person that I was when I started this podcast. Like, I feel like I had to grow a new person to deal with a lot of the stuff that happened, and I'm going to share some of those things. Still thinking about which ones and how much to share, but I think I might just share all of it, which is October, I had someone close to me who was suicidal and was, you know, saying they were going to hurt themselves. Someone I'm really close to, someone I really love. And I felt the need to be there for them for that. And so I took off a lot of time from work and had some pretty like traumatic experiences with that, you know, was with trying to be there in a healthy way for that person. So that was heavy. Like that alone with what 2020 was, I think was like really overwhelming. But then my sister had a car accident. And then I went out to help her because, you know, all her kids are in homeschool because of the shutdown. And so I ended up traveling there for a while and helping out with her. And then I was like, wow, this is just too much, you know. But I was like, it's okay. I'm meditating regularly every day. I'm making sure, like, I'm trying to stay as mentally healthy as I can during all of this.
And you're helping family. People are that close to you. There's some.
Yeah, these didn't feel like optional things. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, none of these were like, oh, maybe I could do this or maybe I could help this. Like, my sister who got in the car accident is my best friend. You've met her. She's been on the show.
Yeah, episode 5.
She is an absolute angel who has just, you know, done anything and everything for me. So there was no way I couldn't do that. So, yeah, these were just situations that, like, I didn't have much choice about my involvement in it, you know. I couldn't necessarily, I guess I could have just like checked out and been like, no, which is basically what I've done with work and other things that haven't been an emergency necessity is that I'm like, everything else, sorry, you are way over here. Love you. You know, we'll get back to the podcast. We'll get back to other things. But like, right now there's pressing issues. And so then, you know, as I'm about to leave California from helping my sister, we found out that my parents have COVID. And I was like, not initially very worried, like, and so yeah, my parents got sick, and like I said, initially I think I was like, oh, I hope that, you know, that that's okay. And I remember one of my sisters, Mary, being like, because I have 4 older sisters, wonderful angel people, and she her being like, are you worried about Dad? And I was like, no. Like, why would I be worried about Dad? Like, and I guess he had had, you know, certain heart surgery like 10 years ago or something, but he's such a fortress of strength in my mind that I just was like, why would I be worried? He'll be totally fine. Like, and then so what ended up happening is that my mom, they both went to the hospital. My mom was okay enough to go home and recover at home, but they kept my dad a couple of days. And even then, like, I was on my way back from California, and I'd actually taken a detour to Idaho to see my other sister, which is when I was talking about this with her about, you know, her concern for my dad. And I was kind of like, well, should I leave right now and like head there? And like, at that point they were like, well, we can't go see him, we can't go help him, you can't go to the hospital. And so I just was like, but still feeling like this like very deep pull, like, well, I at least want to be around. Like, there's nothing I can do, but I desire to be near there. And so we did end up, you know, eventually deciding to head back. And then I can't remember if it was before or after that that they did decide to, I feel like they call it intubating, but I also feel like I've heard it called ventilating. Like, I've kind of heard different things about what that's called. But
I think incubating is when they're putting it in.
I feel like they were doing both. Like, they were running his lungs for him, basically, you know. But they sedated him. They put him under, which I'm going to get weird here for a second, because we wanted to see where he signed and gave consent for that, because he was still coherent when that happened. Like, he told us he's like, yes, it sounds like, you know, I'm going to go under or whatever. But then once we went under and we were kind of having concerns, we were never able to find the paperwork where he had agreed to this, and of course none of us were consulted on whether that was, you know, something to do. And I have my opinions that I'm not sure that was the move. Maybe there was nothing else to do, and I really am grateful for like the healthcare workers and the efforts that they did make, and we took care packages there and stuff like that. I guess I'm just trying to express both that although I was so grateful for all of the help, I'm still kind of like, I don't know, I wish there had been more discussion about this. I wish there, you know, the way I think of my dad, I feel like he could have, you know, gotten better without that. But who knows? I could be way fucking wrong. But that's my gut level feeling. But anyway, so then he was ventilated for 21 days. We weren't able to go see him. We would bring, you know, we brought a boombox that was connected to music with stuff he could listen to, and we the nurses let us call every single night and FaceTime him, and we sang to him for probably an hour to 3 hours every night, which, like, I kind of, like, how could I not be grateful to these nurses that let us do that? I think we really annoyed them. I know there was one night that one nurse was like, okay, well, we, you know, need to take the iPad to someone else. And we were like, oh, yeah, that bitch is sick of us. But we needed that. We didn't know, you know, anything. There was nothing else we could do. And we really, you know, needed... We wanted to see him. We wanted to do that. Even though it was hard, you know, he was not looking great. Didn't look comfortable. So yeah, that was a lot of that experience. I think I would like to share a little bit about why this was such a significant thing for me. It would be significant, I think, for anyone. But like, it kind of ties into the show in that, like, I had just an amazing dad. Like, he was just the greatest. And I was listening to one of our past episodes, and I mentioned my dad, and I didn't realize that. I, like, had forgotten that I had done that when I was reviewing the podcast, and had said that, you know, we would watch movies together. And I got to the point that, like, I really didn't want to go hang out with my friends. I just wanted to stay at home and watch movies with my dad. And so this whole, I'm tying it in where it's like people act like strippers have daddy issues. And I'm like, yeah, that's not the case for me at all. You know, like I think everyone can have issues with their parents. You know, most people do. So to classify, you know, strippers as like the only people who have that or have that more so than others, I'm like, I just think that's not very true. But, and I will admit I've got mommy issues. Me and my mom struggle a lot in our relationship, but me and my dad, you know, didn't. Just briefly, I won't get too much into his history, but like, this is a guy who started a band in Minnesota when he was like 17, and it became so good and so popular, they made it onto a national show that was like an American Idol type show, and then they won it and then got to perform these gigs where they played with like the Mamas and the Papas and Aretha Franklin and shit.
That's awesome.
Like, and then this is what he did. This is my dad. Then he decided to go on a mission, and he had a record contract. He had been like the backbone of this band, and he was like, no, I'm going to go serve a mission for the LDS church, like, oh, which kills me. But also, like, that's what was important to him. And that's, yeah, you know, he did what he felt like was right in his heart. And so he let that go. And he had other bands after that that also were very good. And I listened to some of them recently and just was like, holy shit, he was so good. He was amazing. And so... I tell you that because like that's the dad I grew up with, who was just musical. He sang all the time. He played guitar, like professional expert skill of guitar, and just was a kind-hearted, sensitive person who had the gift of music. And so so what else was I say about him? Oh, so after his mission, of course, he came home and got married, and then his wife died of a brain aneurysm, and then he met my mom and married her. And so then they had kids right away. My mom actually already had a little boy, a toddler, from a previous marriage. Her husband died too. My parents have a crazy story. But anyways, so then he still had that band, but he kind of let it go because he ended up going to law school, because he's like, I can't just be traveling all over the world. He ends up having six kids, you know? And so he decided that law school was going to provide better for them, and so made those sacrifices, but, you know, made sure to share, you know, all that music and stuff. Can we pause? Someone's at my door.
Yeah.
So yeah, back to my dad. Like, I feel like I'm definitely trying to paint him like he's this perfect guy, and he wasn't. He was human, and he had flaws and stuff, but like, Not many. And he didn't have a will, which is insane. He was a lawyer. Like, I'm so, it just blows my mind. I can't understand it other than, like, he really just didn't expect this. No one did, you know? Like, but not even an old will. It just is insane. So we had to go through all his computers. So, like, even while he was in the hospital, we were trying to, he still worked. He still did all these things for my mom. So we're trying to figure all those things out while he's sick and also trying to prepare for if he comes back at all. We are going to have to, you know, be helping out with a lot of things and helping figure things out, that he was really carrying the weight of a lot of things. So we ended up having to go through all his computers, and I'm like searching through his emails, like just anything, which was so hard and was so really bittersweet, because it was just the same reminder of like, this dude was such a good dude. Like, I couldn't find a shitty thing about him. Like, he, you know, had all these emails that were so sweet and kind, and just ways that he reached out to people and loved every single person he ever, like, came in contact with, and was just super inspiring. We never found the will. Never knew what his actual wishes were. And then, like, I think we kind of could tell he was declining, but I was in pretty heavy denial. And so every time we would talk to him over FaceTime every night, there would kind of be an opportunity, or if you wanted to, you could, like, talk to him alone. And I kind of felt like I didn't need to do that. Like, I had a relationship with him where we didn't need to say a lot. We kind of just, like, we could talk about anything, but, like, I didn't feel that pull to do that, but, like, I think it was, like, the day before he died, the last time that we FaceTimed with him, there was an opportunity for that, and I took it, and I was like, okay, I'll talk to him, you know, and I think part of me was never wanting to take time away from anyone else, you know, like, there's four people trying to talk to him. And so I did, and it was just really silly. I reminded him of a story of when I was 17 and I got my tongue pierced, because I was Mormon and I believed the church until I was like almost 30, but I also had a wild hair, you know, like I had a wild streak in me, and I hadn't even had my ears pierced, and I got my tongue pierced in somebody's basement, mind you, and I came home and I had been hiding it for a few days, and eventually I, for some reason, got sick, and I don't know if it was an infection or if I just got the flu or something, but I was, like, panicking, because I was, like, I feel very certain that I don't want to throw up with this brand new thing in my mouth. Like, even just the thought of it was, like, freaking me out. And so I went to my dad's room, and I woke him up, and I was, like, Dad, I did something stupid, and it's the middle of the night, and I don't know what to do. And he just chuckled, and he just chuckled at me and was like, okay. And we went in the bathroom and he helped me unscrew it out of my tongue and just comforted me and you know, wasn't harsh or mean about it or angry. He just was kind of like, wow, you know, like that's a lot. And I had this habit. I've always had this habit. I think you might have even picked up on it. I have a need to shock people. So like that was part of that for me, was like, I had this habit of like, still do, of like, what's the thing no one thinks I will do? What is the thing no one could see coming? Because I don't want anyone who thinks they can define me is just wrong, you know? Anyway, so I reminded him of that story and just told him how grateful I was and how much I loved him, and like, just, you know, expressed all my gratitude, and that was it. Soon after, there's so many details I won't get into. I'm already, you know, telling a very long-winded story, but once we did start to realize that they were like, his organs are failing, like we've tried to wake him a few times in the last, you know, week or so, and he crashes every time we try to wake him up, and then, you know, one by one his organs are just failing. And I remember getting that call that morning, and I just was like, I think I was pretty numb. I just, you know, I had a lot of tears about it later, and since then,
Were you still up there, or were you back in?
I was back in Utah for the whole 21 days. You know, like once it did start to feel like very serious, I knew that there wasn't anything I could do, but I just knew I wanted to be here. And I knew my mom needed my support. And once, you know, her COVID, once she had been quarantined, that she was going to need, and just to know that I was close. So I would bring her things and drop them off and things like that. And, you know, just wanted, my dad has loved that woman his entire life. He has cared for her. And I know that, you know, to honor him, the best thing I could do is make sure she's okay. And so anyways, so they let us know, and they told us that we could come to the hospital. You know, we'd have to dress up in hazmat suits, and I feel like I'm telling this very dryly, which I'm doing intentionally, because like I feel very determined not to cry. It might happen, but I have a goal to not cry while I'm talking about this. But
I'm trying to keep a weird eye contact where I'm like looking, but not locking eyes, because you know that. That's when crying can happen. Is when
it's true. Yeah. Someone gives you a hug or looks at you, and then you're like, I was holding it together, and now I can't. You know, I'm kind of, you know, my dad was a little stoic, and I think I picked that up, and I typically can kind of hold on to that and then express my feelings, you know, at other times privately, which I'm not saying is always a good thing, but sometimes can be a good thing. So anyways, we, and there was a lot of that grief process where part of me was like trying to figure out like this is wrong. There's something like the doctors are not right, and like this isn't happening, and we need to get a second opinion. And maybe some of that had been true in the beginning, and we didn't do that. But at this point, it wasn't to that point anymore. It was, you know, they'd kind of been, I think, trying to hint to us for days, but like, we weren't listening. You know, we were like, la la la, no, he's gonna be fine. I can't deal with that. And so then they did allow us to go up to the hospital, and we went in like two at a time, and I did FaceTime my daughter in, which I didn't know if that was the right decision or not, and I still don't. I just knew that she really loved him, and she was having a hard time with everything, and that, you know, I wanted her, if she wanted to participate in that, even though she couldn't actually be there. And so then, you know, I went in with my sister Mary, and I have this memory that like sticks with me like so clearly, her in this hazmat suit, like, you know, close to my dad, and seeing her lean in close to him, and seeing her mouth move, and I could tell it seemed like she was praying. And which I actually asked her later. I was like, were you praying? And she was like, no, I was telling him things. But, you know, same, right? Same diff. And Mary, my sister Mary, is this beautiful woman. She looks kind of like Mary, the mother of Jesus. Like, no joke. She's dark hair and just kind and warm and just lovely. And I... that memory, it seems very painful, but also so amazing and so beautiful to be there with her and to have this moment and this memory with her. And then at the end, we all did get to go in there. I think I could tell there was some disagreements kind of with the workers there, that like some people were like, they needed to get out of here. And some people were like, some people had been there for us calling, I'm not going to cry. I didn't make it. I knew some of them had hurt us every night. And they knew what we were losing. The kind of person, the kind of man, the kind of dad. And so I could tell they were not, I don't know that they were in agreement, but we did end up, as all the children, being able to go in there and lay our hand on his chest, and, you know, while they unhooked him and be there. And this is an absolute truth. On the boombox we brought for him, hit the road jack, came on just as he left. It was totally, you know, painful and beautiful and hilarious that he played that song for us. Like, I know he did. And, you know, I didn't know if these were things I wanted to share. I didn't know if I wanted to talk about this. And obviously it's been, my dad died December 1st. It's the end of January now. And I knew I wanted to complete this podcast, but I was like, I don't think I'm ready. I don't know if I can share these things. But there's a part of me that wanted to, because we all go through having to lose our parents, right? I mean, more than likely. And I wanted to, like, I don't know, if you have lost a parent or if you, you know.
Yeah, I lost my mom when I was 12, breast cancer.
Oh my gosh. That's too early.
Yeah.
That's too early. But yeah, this is, death is universal. We're all gonna die. We're all gonna lose people. You know, I lost my brother 10 years ago. And have I talked much about that?
You might have mentioned, but I think you've...
I might touch on it in this one today. I might not. Like I said, I haven't really been totally sure of what I'm going to share. I just knew I was going to be in the moment and see what came up and what felt right. But let's see, in conclusion with that story, not even in conclusion, because it's ongoing. This is going to be hard for a very long time. I took lots of time off. I spent lots of time alone. I spent lots of time meditating. I felt very in tune and aware that, like, I needed that. Like, that the pain I was feeling needed to be honored and needed to be felt and expressed. And that I wasn't... Even to the point where, like, I did spend a lot of time with my family and my sisters, and that felt good and soothing, but there was times I even had to pull back from that and go and just be completely alone. Because I feel a propensity, and I don't know if other people feel this, but, like, when I'm in that much pain, just like anyone, or even just like a dog or an animal, that much pain, there's a probability that you're going to lash out at other people. Like, you know, when you're in that much pain, you won't mean to, but it's like, you know, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to, like, really deal with it, and I didn't want to push it away and stay busy and do a million things and leave that for later, a time not of my choosing, because that's how I feel like it's happened for me before, or how I've seen other people deal with pain.
And I think it's good that you had that flexibility, that you could take that time to be away. Cause,
yeah,
know, some people, you know, they have to get back to work.
I could not have felt that deeper, like, the deepest gratitude, the deepest, like, I am going through some shit, but I am a blessed, blessed fucking person. Like, the fact that I could do that. I mean, it meant putting off a lot of different goals. It meant, you know, I barely worked in 2020 and I didn't make what I thought I would make. But I definitely knew that my mental health was first, you know, and that my spiritual health, I guess, isn't, you know, and all those end up connecting to my physical health. Like, during a pandemic and stuff, the last thing I want to do is compromise my immune system. So I just really took care of myself. I babied this bitch. Like, I was there for her. I was like, but yeah, it's been really interesting. Like I said, I had to grow a new person. And, like, in the same way I've felt these metaphors of, like, birth, like, I had to rest and I had to, you know, intubate, that's actually the word we're talking about earlier, that doesn't make sense, but what's it called when you're in womb? Utero, I don't know.
In utero, yeah.
In utero?
Is that the Nirvana album name? Yeah.
Is
that's where my mind went, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
In utero, yeah.
So, yeah, I felt like, you know, I've been growing a new person who has, I had to. There was no way I could have dealt with any of the things I dealt with. There's no way I could have, like, come out of that the other side and be grateful and be happy and joyful and have peace in my life if I didn't take the time to, like, grow into the person I had to be to now live with this. Did you feel like that when you were 12 years old, or like, or was it something that you did have to wait and deal with a lot later?
Later, probably later, because I, you know, after she died, we moved out to Salt Lake, and a couple years later, my brother died, and then I think that's when I started, you know, dealing with it, because it's like she's gone, you know. It was during the school year, you know. It was just before Christmas,
yeah.
When, went right into Christmas. My dad's dad died at the same time, so it was a lot. I think I really didn't deal with it,
yeah,
until my brother died, and I think it did kind of screw me up, kind of emotionally, like reaching out to attach to people for that warmth.
Yeah. But at that time, that's, you know, sometimes what you have to do, because you don't know how to do anything else, you know? I had a question about that with you. I just was going to say, I don't think there's anything wrong that sometimes you do need to wait. This is bringing up stuff from my brother's death 10 years ago, you know? Like, stuff that, you know, I did not handle that well. Not like I handled it terribly, but, like, I don't know what I've said, but just, you know, that was a really rough time in my life, and I definitely went the route of, like, trying to brush it under the rug, trying to, like, stay busy and do different things and, like, pushing it away, like, but, you know, no, it came back for many times. Came back and let me know.
And were you guys close, or was there
me and my brother?
Yeah.
So this was something I did want to touch on eventually, and I think, you know, now's a better time than ever. We're getting real vulnerable. Let's just, like, get there, because this has been coming, a lot of this has been coming up for me. So my brother was a drug user, abuser. Both my brothers ended up being, I don't know how much I've discussed that here, but he overdosed on heroin when he was 37, and he had three kids, has three kids who are adults now. But, you know, he had been abusing drugs my entire life since I can remember. He was 12 years older, is 12 years older than me. So I loved him very much. He was, when I was little, he was just the coolest guy, like, cool, like, very, I don't know, the first thing that came to my mind was Kurt Cobain, which is very terrible, and I think Kurt Cobain died at 37 also. Is that right?
27,
that's the age a lot of them die at.
Yeah, 27 Club.
27 Club, and so, but cool in that way, just cool in, like, a,
It seemed like he had it together and was charming.
No, okay. Not that he had it together. No, that he was just cool guy, and he was gorgeous. Yeah. Like, I have this humiliating story where I was filming something at my house during when I was making a short film once, and one of my friends looked at a picture of my brother who had passed on the wall, and he's like, "Why do you have this big picture of a male model in your living room?" And I was like, "Oh, that's my brother. He died." And it was so cringy. But, like, my brother was very beautiful, like a very beautiful man. People compared him to Brad Pitt. Like, he, which is funny because people, like, if you, I've had people compare me to Brad Pitt when you set us up side by side. And his name was Brad, which was funny too. But had a wonderful light about him, a wonderful, like, playful, childlike, artistic, was musically inclined, like my dad, you know, had these wonderful, lovely things about him. But I have very dark memories of him, going all the way back to when I was 5. So when he died, I ended up, so I just had a baby, my husband was in the hospital getting surgery, and then I found out my brother had died, and then shortly after that I got divorced. So like, when it rains, it pours. I feel like that's a very common theme in my life, and I've noticed it in others. It's just like bam, 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 bam. And so I really pushed that away, and I really struggled with my feelings. And I remember, I don't know if I should say this either, but I'm going to. I remember my husband at the time saying something like, I was trying to express these feelings and I was choking on them, like didn't know how to express them. And he was like, it's okay to be glad that he's gone. And I sat there and was like, you don't get it. You don't get it at all. Like, I'd never felt more misunderstood in my entire life. I was like, no, that's not how I feel. And like, I had never let go of hope, and I still don't. My other brother's also a drug addict. And he has times where he's not so bad, and then he has times where he's really bad. I don't know that he's had any long-term sobriety. But, you know, I really struggle. Not as much now. It did bring up a lot for this, you know, losing my dad and how different that felt. How different to lose someone that you had all these, like, conflicting feelings about, and then to lose someone that, like, I was not conflicted about how I felt to my dad. That man was a tent pole in my life. Like, he was a pillar. But yeah, we don't have to add this, but it's, you know, this is what's going on right now. And I feel weird because I feel very proud of myself that I'm like, I'm a happy whole person. I am. And when I think about my dad and what happened, like, I would meditate a lot on it, and I would feel such a white hot light in my heart that I had this man for my dad, and that the reason I could feel this sad about it was because I had that in my life. And it started to be like, every time I think about it, I can't separate it from this like perfect love that I'm just like, how could I be mad? How could I be sad? How could I be dwelling on what I don't have when, like, I don't know. Am I making sense to you?
Oh, totally. Because I think that's the way grief should be. Mm. You know, because I've had people die in my family recently, my grandma. And
yeah.
And even one of my cousins died and stuff like that. And when we go to the family stuff, they talk about, you know, if they were still here, it's like they're gone. They were amazing when they were here. Think about that. It's like, you know, I think the way it happened to you is the way it should, where, you know, you introspect and find the beauty in that person and appreciate that beauty.
Yeah, that you could not feel this kind of pain if you had not felt the kind of love and joy that person brought to you. And I do know a lot of people who don't see it that way. And when I've said things even alluding to that, they're kind of like, they want to be stuck in the pain. They want to suffer in it. And that's not a choice I want to make. I've made that choice before. I know what that choice feels like. That's not what my dad would want for me. That's absolutely not what he would want for me. My dad was a joyful man constantly, and that dude went through a ton of shit, and he was always kind, always joyful, and the best thing I do to honor him is to have real happiness in my life and be the kind of person he was and be, you know, full of kindness, love, and integrity and stuff. So I hope this was helpful to anyone, even just as a processing tool. I don't know.
Yeah, I took from it, so.
Then that's all, yeah. Like, perfect. If you got
if we can help
from
one
it.
Person, I'm the one person that hopefully helps more than
dude,
more
and
than
I
you.
And I'm hoping it helped me, because I do struggle, I think, with being more vulnerable with people or like really open. Like when I posted about my dad being sick, you remember, on Instagram. So it's been hard because I've been posting very minimally since then, because I know that I haven't been very open on the platform about my dad's death. And I do probably every time I post, people are like, oh, hey, how's your dad? And I'm like scared to even like go on there or say anything because people want to ask about my dad. And to be truthful, I knew that I needed what we're doing right now first. I needed to wait. I needed time. I needed to you know, let myself, I call it cocooning. And then I needed, but then I also could feel that I needed to do this, even though I really didn't want to. Like, all the way up to the second we started recording, and even a few minutes after that, I was like, I don't want to do this. I do not want to talk about my feelings. I do not want to be vulnerable in this way. But yeah, I think my kind of intention is to use this as like a opportunity for me to be more open and more vulnerable with people. But I'll still know that I'm going to have times where I'm going to need to retreat to the bat cave and cocoon into a butterfly. And that's okay.
And during that time, I hope I succeeded at giving you the space I need, but still letting you know that I'm there.
Yeah. I thought of you today as my Jiminy Cricket, where you're like, you know, or in the Mormon culture, the still small voice, where you were like, buddy.
I noticed the past 2 weeks that I've been sending at least hi every day.
Oh.
And I'm like, I probably should.
I hope you don't mind that. I will just tune you out when I'm in a different place, you know? Like, I hope that's okay, you know, that yeah. I don't even notice sometimes. I'm just like, we'll see things or something on social media or on my phone, and I got like my bubble going on where I'm just like, that's not, I have to deal with what's right here. And that's been a lot of late. So yeah, covered a lot.
Yeah.
I did cry once, but then I got it together.
Yes, you did. You pulled it together quick.
I did. I really did. Is there anything else you wanted to know about that? Because I feel very candid about it, especially now that, you know, I've kind of unloaded a lot of it.
I guess one thing, one episode you said you'd like to have your dad on the podcast.
I would have 100% had my dad on the podcast.
But no, that's not possible.
No.
In your head, how do you think that would have
so
went? Yeah.
I don't know what I don't remember everything I said, but I know that like my car would break down and he would come to the club and he would chat outside with the bouncers or whoever, because I'm not supposed to be usually outside of the club by myself. And he was the way people like Christians should aspire to be. He just was no respecter of persons. He treated everyone like they were the most respected, beautiful person ever. So I think it would have been really lovely to have him on. I think he would tell you something he told me often, which was that he was very proud of me. I don't know that necessarily he was proud of that choice that I made. I don't know that he liked it. You know, I think I told the story of when he found out. Have I told that story?
I'm not
that
sure.
That I was a stripper. It was short and brief, so I'll just say.
Yeah, and I think this is a good place to.
Yeah, yeah, retell it if yeah. I have already told it. But he just, I think that was very hard for him. He grew up with very, you know, different values than that. And my mom told him. I hadn't told him. She had found my sexually oriented business license in my car. And she had told him, and me and him had to go run an errand or something together. I don't remember, because he was always very helpful for me with things. But he said, your mom told me, you know, what you're doing for work. And he said, and I just want you to know there's nothing I'd ever want to say or do to alienate you. I love you so much. And that was kind of it. He just wanted, I think he didn't know quite what to say. And so he was just trying to say, like, I don't want to say anything that's going to, like, be offensive. I don't, this is new territory, you know? And from there on, he's one of the only people who would ask me, like, how's work going? Who didn't pretend like I didn't have a job, because a lot of people like to pretend like I don't have a job because they don't want to talk about my job. But he would. He'd ask me how things were going. So I would have had him on. I don't know. I think he might have been a little bit similar to that interaction where he wouldn't have really known a lot to say. He doesn't understand the culture. He doesn't really know much about any of that. He probably would tell stories about me and, like, you know, would express how he felt about me. I remember this memory came to me and I just want to share it. I had injured myself dancing several years ago, like 6 years ago. I'd had another knee dislocation. I've had many knee and shoulder dislocations. And I was working at a restaurant. And, like, I was wearing a brace and stuff, but I knew I couldn't walk around in 8-inch heels or whatever. So I was working at a restaurant as a waitress, and this woman who was my manager was so mean to me. Like, she was just constantly, like, berating me and stuff. And the kind of, like, tipping point, and I think I quit right after this, was I was carrying a tray of drinks, which, P.S., I was never good at being a server. I am not called to do this. I do not have the skill set. I do not have whatever it takes. And I hated it so much. And so, anyways, I'm carrying this huge tray of drinks, and something happened, and I dropped all of them. And she came up to me and was, like, telling me I was stupid and, like, was so vicious to me. And I went home just bawling and just completely destroyed, like what am I doing, you know. And my dad was just so sweet, and he was like, I was just staying there because I was having my floors done, I didn't live there, but I cried to him, and he was just really calm and sweet, but he just reassured me that he's like, you are brilliant, you are, you know, that lady's wrong, and everyone has different strengths, and just was, you know, a dad from a TV show. Like, he wasn't even real. Like,
and that stuff with the that can happen to anybody, even the best servers probably.
You know, but it can happen to you more when you're doing something that you are not meant to do. Yeah. You know, you're trying to force something you're not good at. And here's what's funny about that is I ended up, this is so terrible, I forged a doctor's note after that to go back to stripping. Like, I went to my office where I'd had my knee stuff or whatever, and I didn't tell them who I was, and I didn't tell them what I'd been to the hospital for. I just said, hey, I'm a patient, and I need a doctor's note for work to say I can go back to work. And that person just wrote it, didn't ask me a single question, because they told me at work I couldn't come back because it happened at work. They saw it happen. Like, my knee dislocated while I was on the pole, and I had to put it back in myself. I had to grab that kneecap, my patella. But by that point, I had been taught to do that because I knew that it was a problem I had. P.S. Lift weights gently and you won't have those problems anymore. I've never had it happen again after I started, like, lifting weights more regularly.
Every episode has a shocking moment. And you.
That was your shocking one?
Yeah. It's like, she makes me gulp at least once an episode.
Yeah. I was proud of myself because I had to go to the hospital and been put under and have it put back by someone else before because we couldn't get it to go back in. And so I was really proud of myself that I was like, you can do this. You can put this back in, and gathered my courage and popped that baby
and
back in.
And everybody's watching and you're just like.
Yeah, it's a Friday night at a packed club. I had to be carried off the stage because I was like, I'm not walking on this. I'm like, sir, someone, I have a problem. I need you to come. Anyways, so I hated that job so bad that, yeah, I went to the doctor, got that forged note, and I took it back to my work and was like, they cleared me, I'm fine.
Technically not forged since they signed it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I shouldn't incriminate myself in that way.
Everybody's legally fine.
Yeah. But yeah. And I can feel, I'm glad I'm doing this podcast. I can tell that the time for me to move on from dancing is coming. I'm not sure if that'll be soon, in a year or 2 years, but like, but I loved it, and it was so what I was meant to do. It was not serving at a restaurant and being treated like I was, you know, an idiot. Anywho, hope you, you know, grew with me during this experience. I've grown a ton. I'm so glad I've gotten to do it, and, you know, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope everyone who listened enjoyed it, and thanks.
Thanks.